to order the council, city council meeting of October the 24th at approximately 6:10 p.m. We get a call for a moment of silence. We could stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Charlie Hawkins.
Here.
Dennis Olson.
Here.
Bonnie Onion.
Here.
Harry Robinson.
Here.
Steve Lawrenson.
Here.
Mary Lou Stewart.
Here.
Paul Greeno.
Here. Okay, do we have anyone who has signed up to comment this evening? Ray Wilkett. Ray, if you would be kind enough to come forward and please state your name and address for the record, please.
Ray Wilkett, 780 Adelia Street, Blaine.
And what would you like to address this?
I'd like to address the issue of crosswalks on Mitchell Street, especially Adelia and Mitchell. It is between the school and Peace Portal, you got a half a mile. There's not one crosswalk on that street. And we're getting more and more people crossing the street, especially Adelia and Mitchell. And all I'm asking for, and have been asking for, is a sign that says pedestrian crosswalk and a crosswalk. In fact, Steve Lawrence said he'd help keep painted on there if the city gave him the paint. He knows the issue.
Gotcha.
And I can't understand why that can't be done. Just a simple signage with little blinking lights. Because that is the most used intersection on that stretch. And it's very building. They're building more and more houses at the end of Adelia, east side. And the second issue is when Canadians come down out of Canada and they come down by the subway over on Portland.
Yes.
The street sign that says 25 miles an hour cannot be seen because it got hid behind the Welcome to Blaine sign. I can't understand why that sign can't be moved over to the roundabout. Nobody's driving on the roundabout. And those are my issues, and I'd like to know why they can't be addressed, or if they are being addressed, what's going on, because I've talked people about these crosswalks, and they said something about going to count the cars or something, but we're not talking about cars, we're talking about kids, and we got an abundance of them on that street. That's my issues.
Thank you, Ray, and I appreciate your comments, and we'll ask our Public Works Director if she would like to comment at this time, or if you'd like to meet with Ray separately, or
I would be happy to meet with you separately or on site if you would like. What we have done is traffic counts as well as pedestrian counts at that intersection. We did not see anything different there than we saw in other parts of Mitchell Street. And the issue with the crosswalk is it's a lot more than just signs. Crosswalk, you need to put down the striping, which needs to be maintained. You were actually talking about blinking lights, which is requires electricity and a much fancier type of sign. And then the other part of it's enforcement. And so we don't want to be putting crosswalks in places where it gives people a false sense of security by it being there when we have abundant crosswalks over by the school. So what I have promised to the council is that we would redo those counts again, now that school's back in session, and that is our plan, And we can also look at other intersections if you'd like, and or, like I said, I'd be happy to meet you on site.
Yeah, what about the streets and exits?
The 25-mile-an-hour sign, I'll have to look into that. That was not reported to me as there that being an issue, so we really count on citizens bringing forward issues like that to us, because we need you to be our eyes sometimes. I would say moving it closer to the roundabout, however, could create some issues, because WashDOT, or the state, has jurisdiction there, and we've actually been meeting with them on the phone about every other week or so to talk about different sign requests and other things coordination-wise between our two jurisdictions, and it's pretty hard to get new signs through them. So they would see that as a new sign, or moving that sign closer to the roundabout. They might have some other ideas, however, and we want to make sure it's visible, so I will look into that. Thank you. Which part? About the signs?
The welcome to Blaine side up, it blocks the view and hides the street speed limit sign. So they don't know what the speed limit is coming down that. You can't see it.
Now, Raven, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's a state highway. And is that their sign?
Well, the welcome to Blaine sign is ours. The speed sign is most likely the state's. So you have an interjurisdictional issue there.
If it's in back of the welcome to Blaine sign, how is it the state?
It's in
the
highway.
We'll look into it, Ray, and see if there's a way.
Yeah, I was not aware of that, so thank you very much.
We have to get the Washington state to agree to moving the sign. But we'll look into it and make sure that sign gets up there.
If we go back to Mitchell Street,
I think if you could meet with Raven personally, I think that would give you an opportunity to work on that issue.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, any written communication?
We don't have any tonight.
Okay. Next item is our consent agenda. We have approval of bills in the amount of $92,945.78. Approval of council minutes for October the 10th, 2016. Approval of the council study session minutes for October the 17th, 2016. I would be willing to entertain a motion.
So move.
Motion has been made.
Second it.
And seconded. Are there any questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Motion is carried 7-0. Next item on our agenda is the public hearing, and that's on the 2017 property tax levy. And Jeff, are you going to introduce that item?
All right, so may I remind you that there's no action tonight on this item. This is just the first public hearing, and that I recommend that you carry it to the next council meeting, or leave the public hearing open until the next council meeting. There we go. So you've heard this before, but the statutory limit on the limit placed on cities with a population of under 10,000 and levying a property tax increase is 1%. And that's on the previous property tax revenue plus any new construction. And over the last few years in terms of construction, it's been down, but in this past year, I've seen a pretty noticeable increase in construction. Our total assessed valuation has plateaued, But I understand from the county assessor's office is that we are part of that portion of the county that actually gets a physical reassessment. So I will find out what that assessment numbers are once they've completed that process. So a 1% increase on the current revenues, our current property tax revenue of $1,071,000, and a 1% increase on that would generate an additional $10,712 in revenue, property tax revenue. So what does that mean for an average homeowner? Say, and I picked a value of $250,000, that would be approximately a $3.52 increase for the year. And keep in mind, that's just the city's portion. There's other jurisdictions, obviously, that levy property tax revenue, school being one, and several fire district being another, as well as the library district. So this pie chart here breaks out what our general fund property tax revenue pays for. It pays for general operations, 18% to general fund operations, 12% to street operations, 14% to street overlay projects, and then 56% to street capital, which is actually used to pay the street bond that we have. And the final payment on that bond is at the end of 2017. So that 56% allocation can be reallocated to general fund operations. We also have the special levy or excess levy on the fire station on Odell Road, and that was passed by the voters in 2002, and that bond matures in 2021. And to meet the current debt payment on that bond, it would require 17 cents per thousand dollars of assessed valuation to continue to meet that debt service.
Jeff, can you go back to the first slide that you had on the numbers?
This one? That one?
So $352 per year on that house.
Okay. For 2017, if you took a 1% increase on average, it would be $352. So your options are to take no increase from the previous year or take the allowed 1% increase. And if you recall, we from our last year's discussion, we don't have any bank capacity because we had to issue some property tax refunds. I don't know of any refunds being need to be issued for next year, but I will find out. But I haven't heard of any to date.
Jeff, that would mean that we should be aware if we take the 1%, we could have to come up with monies if there is a refund due by somewhere in the system.
That's certainly a probability. But I would, again, I would confirm if there are any. Like I said, I don't anticipate any, but I will find out.
Jeff, we can actually thank that. We don't take the increase.
If you don't take this year's increase, you can't bank it. That's correct. Right.
Setting it aside to use it at
for this year, exactly. Previous year's bank capacity has been eaten up. Yeah, that's correct. Any additional questions? Okay.
Thank you, Jeff. Now, is there anyone that would like to speak to this issue? Hearing none, I will carry forward the public hearing to our next council meeting, which will be
November the 14th,
2016 at 6 p.m. Okay, next item on our agenda is the council action items. The first item is the letter of agreement with the Boundary Fish.
So I'm bringing this forward to you. Boundaries Fish is are part of a legacy of fish processors. I guess you could say that the last of that legacy that discharged to an old outfall that's no longer permitted. Back when we had the old wastewater plant, we would not have the capacity to help them. But because we have the new plant and they are structurally able to connect to our existing line, we are recommending this letter of agreement to treat their high-strength waste. I should say this is being requested by the Department of Ecology. They indicated that there would be no change in our permit. So, you know, there is that. The only other option for them would be to haul the process waste away, and that could have some severe ramifications to that business. Being as we have the capacity and the processing of fish is only seasonal, so it's something that we will be able to program and be prepared for in terms of the different loading on the plant, we are recommending that you approve the city manager to sign the letter of agreement with Boundary Fish. I'm available if there's any questions.
So they've been using the old outfall up to this point?
Yes, ma'am.
So even though we haven't, that's been legal then?
Yeah.
To use the old outfall?
No, it was just recently discovered.
Oh, I see.
Like I said, this is part of a legacy of processors where they it was like a consortium, if you will. And so I don't think they were aware of the fact that everybody else has now broken off and is not using that anymore. So this legacy of usage was recently observed.
Yeah, go ahead.
And this is just, I'm just curious about this. So they have what is considered a high-strength waste. So when they wash down, are they using chemicals to wash down?
No, the only portion of this that is considered high strength is the blood water of the fish. So they're actually washing down with fresh water. There's no concern about chemicals. It's just the loading of the blood water, which, as we understand it, just from doing some background testing of our own, probably doesn't even meet the criteria for a surcharge from us. So it initially appears to be very small loading and very periodic.
So even though it's organic in nature, there's a danger in just sending that out through the old, without treatment. It's just not allowed.
Right. Yes. Like I said, they'd have to haul it away, and that could have severe ramifications to their business.
Okay.
Dennis, was this the milky outfall?
I believe that would be one way to describe it, yes.
Okay. That connection then would be made, and they're only going to use it periodically.
They're going to connect to our sewer for their wash down, and as I understand it, they have peak usage twice a year. The rest of the time, they're not processing. They're just capturing.
Well, I guess my question is there any other industry in town that is only periodic?
I don't know the answer to that question. Sorry.
Well, I was looking at the fee schedules, and I see, you know, if you go on vacation for 6 months.
Oh, I see what you're saying. They are only processing periodically. They are still in business year-round. They still have a sewer service. They're still using water.
Okay.
So that's the difference.
Charles, so do they have a catch basin to collect all the fish scales and slime and stuff?
They have a pre-screen, yes. 2 millimeter, from what I understand.
Further questions? Okay, now, the staff recommends that the City Council authorize the City Manager to sign the letter of agreement with Boundary Fish, Inc. for treatment of high-strength waste.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
Motion has been made and second. Are there any further questions or comments? Dennis has a question.
So they will be paying at the high strength rate?
The high strength rate only applies if, what this will mean is that they have to do testing to determine the strength. If their strength remains below a threshold, they don't pay a surcharge, so they're just paying their waste based on the size of their meter. So, but if it does show that the waste is a certain strength, then they pay a surcharge based on their BOD, biologic oxygen demand, and their TSS, total suspended solids.
So who's doing the testing?
They're doing the testing, and we're overseeing it.
They have
similar
to
what we're doing with Nature's Path.
They have to get an outside party to do the testing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Does Avocet still do that?
Avocet does. Nature's Path is using Edge Analytical, and we recently discussed actually taking over that testing from them. So that's something that you'll probably be coming to you with a contract amendment in the future for something along that line. We have a little bit more staff right now in the lab that are able to take those duties in. It's not really going to be a lot of revenue for us because we're going to actually be spending it, but it just gives us more control over the changes. We get the results faster. So if that works for Nature's Path, we'll likely do the same for Boundary Fish. But for right now, since we're not all set up for that, they're going to do their own.
Dennis, do you have another question?
The byproduct that will be operated on by the treatment plant, is there any chance that'll mess up the system?
No.
Okay.
Not based on the numbers that we received. And there is a cancellation clause in here if we, you know, see something crazy. But I gotta remember, we've been accepting Nature's Path now for over a year and a half. We're just getting what they call their bar line, which is the clean water, not peanut butter days. But in any event, their loading is much higher than the loading here will be.
Okay,
and we're still fine.
We have a motion on the table that the City Council approve the City Manager to sign the letter of agreement with Boundary Fish, Inc. for treatment of the high-strength waste. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. Hearing none, the motion is carried 7-0. Next item on our agenda is Resolution 1694-16, adopting a legislative agenda.
Good evening, staff, council. There's been conversation since I've been here about having a legislative agenda. And this past few weeks and months, it seemed like it's become more and more important. We've had conversations with the Del Benny's office about BACUS. We've been having conversations with Senator Erickson on Exit 274. So it made sense that we bring this forward to the council for consideration. The resolution is on the second page, and then the list of top priorities are on the second, third page. And you can see that we've divided them in three different categories, those which we think are specific to Blaine. Blaine supports state funding sources for I-274 interchange. Blaine supports federal funding sources to relocate the Vehicle and Cargo Inspection System, or BACUS, to address emergency access and ensure public safety. Blaine supports legislation to address freight rail safety and congestion issues, oil spill responses, and first responder training for hazardous materials. Blaine supports dedicating a portion of any new fuel tax revenue to direct distributions to cities and counties for their local road maintenance needs. Blaine supports allowing both the state and local governments to adopt the option of replacing the property tax cap, which we talked about tonight, up to the rate of inflation, or 1%, whichever is higher. So those are the top priorities relative to City of Blaine. The state priorities are those that we took from the AWC's list. You recall the AWC has a list of agenda items that they recommend that cities adopt, and those listed are those from AWC. Maintain a city-state partnership for shared revenues to fund key services, support and enhance actions to increase affordable housing, decrease homelessness, and improve a strained mental and behavioral health system, update the Public Record Act so cities can continue to provide open and transparent government services to Washington residents, revitalize key infrastructure assistance programs to support job creation, our health and safety, economic vitality, and quality of life, provide adequate and sustainable funding to maintain high-quality statewide training for law enforcement personnel, respect city local authority with regards to revenues, taxes, licensing, and home rule. City officials are elected and must have the authority to resolve local challenges. Maintain funding for the Municipal Research Services Center to provide vital support for local government performance. Then the federal priorities include close the online sales loophole, sales tax loophole, excuse me, protect municipal bonds, invest in infrastructure, maintain community development funding, ensure safe communities. So you can see the priorities get more and more vague as you get higher in the government. And you know, the purpose behind these is really to give council members and staff, but council members particularly, a platform to talk to their local legislatures so that if you're having a conversation with Mr. Bies or any of the other ones, you can tell them that these are our priorities and our council has recognized them, they've discussed them, and we support the conversation about that. So in particular, I-274 and the Bacchus are really important to the city. This week, there's a meeting with Senator Erickson, and I think it would be beneficial for those meeting with him, I think, which is the mayor, and I think Ms. Onion's going to be there. There could be another council member if you're available. You're going to attend to, Mary Lou. So then at that meeting, if you can tell Senator Erickson, these are important items for the city, and these in particular are important to us. You know, the point of this legislative action is not a one-time hit. It's a situation where if the council is involved actively with other jurisdictions, other county officials, state officials, you can repeatedly speak to them on things that you know are important that come before you. Now, some of the things that come before you could be part of this conversation. You don't even know what it is yet because it hasn't surfaced as a priority, but it may, and that gives you, there's enough latitude in this set of priorities to give you a place to talk about those things. So from staff's point of view, from my point of view, I would recommend that you could debate these priorities, discuss which ones you think are important, and then for tonight's purposes, adopt them relative to the resolution. Then we will use these as we speak to the people we work with. Raven mentioned that she has conversations about every 2 weeks with WashDOT. This is something that can add to that conversation. These are important subject matters for the city to consider. This coming Thursday, we certainly would want to talk about it with Erickson. So I'll take any questions you might have or leave it to you to discuss amongst yourselves.
I have one on the last one for the Blaine's top priorities, the property tax. I don't understand. We have a 1% that we're allowed now. So how is this going to be better?
So if inflation is 1.5%, then this would allow cities to collect up to 1.5%.
Oh,
so whatever inflation is.
We go back. Inflation's higher.
Yeah.
So the cap is the rate of inflation.
So inflation typically has been higher than 1%?
Yeah, a little bit.
Usually.
I just wonder if anybody, in consideration of the problem with Bacchus and the problem with 274, has considered extending that overpass that is presently there to go over the railway so that there isn't that cutoff. That's the safety issue when the trains go through Bacchus and sometimes get stopped for up to 3 hours, that it poses a severe safety risk to those residents on the west of Blaine. That is a simple, although expensive, solution that would provide access out of West Blaine to the hospital or from the fire trucks or whatever. And I think that's more important than extending from heading south from the border 274 to come into Blaine.
I can let Raven speak to that.
So the We have what's called an interchange justification report, IJR, that was done, don't quote me, I want to say 2009, but that might be wrong. In any event, it needs to be updated. But for your information, that report includes all the alternatives, that being one of them. The interchange modifications have always been intended to be in both directions. One, to provide better access, not only for West Blaine, but to get trucks that are coming off of there directly to Odell, so there's a lot less impact on the city streets. So I welcome you. If you'd like, I can loan you my copy of the report. Our hope is just to get enough design money from the state that we can update that report, about $100,000, believe it or not, just to update a report of that magnitude. It's a book. And Mr. Bullock and myself have both come up with some alternatives that we think are a little less expensive. But, of course, what you're proposing is the highest ticket sure. item of the whole thing.
Sure. But, again, how many people's lives, as the previous city manager's wife so eloquently presented, are at risk if we don't do anything?
Understood.
David, I compliment you on doing this. I think it's long overdue. The one thing I would suggest you might want to consider is that we have local politics as well, and I think jail is one issue that from a legislative point of view, we would certainly like this, the county council to get their act together and figure out what's required to fund a new jail or build a new jail. And I'm sure EMS might be another issue on there that we could address. So I'm saying there's some local county issues that we've got members that are on the county council that we should probably be talking to as well, and Barbara Brenner, making sure that she understands that we have issues. And if we could include that on there, perhaps maybe that's one of the copies we could send to Barbara.
Sure. Well, thank you for the compliment. I need to give it to Raven and to Sherry. They're the ones that did the heavy lifting on this on our behalf. You could add language, for example, another bullet point at the bottom of that Blaine's top priorities, something like Blaine encourages the county council to expedite funding for jail construction.
Yes.
Something simple that states the purpose of...
Yeah, because we recognize that as a top priority. Mm-hmm. Okay. Not only us, but the rest of the county. So, question?
Okay, Dennis.
We have a question, Dan.
Dave, does that mean there should be another list of priorities that fit under the county?
You could add a county section if there's more than just the jail funding that you're interested in.
EMS.
So the Blaine City Council endorses the EMS proposition. Is that something like that? Or
I think we're getting into a foggy area.
Yeah.
So encourages a solution, whatever that may be. It's kind of vague, but at least gives you a chance to speak about it.
Do we have to be concerned that we are reaching a point of acting as, how do I want to put it politely?
Acting as what?
Not if we're worried about
we're being partisan about the issue, and
no.
We are...
No, I don't think you're being partisan. I think you have the authority as a group to endorse public actions one way or the other. You have, as individuals, certainly have the right as citizens to support or not actions. So I think you can... This isn't about a person or elected office. It's about an initiative. So I think you're probably within your rights to do this. If you wanted to do something like this...
But if you word it in such a way that seeking a solution to future EMS needs or that sort of thing.
We call so it something like agenda. Lane encourages a rapid solution to EMS needs in the county?
Maybe Blaine supports the county to continue reviewing funding for jail, funding for a new jail and EMS solutions.
EMS. You could combine those?
Combine them, I suppose.
Actually, if I may, by coincidence, I received a Municipal Research News folder today. And on the front page, it says something to the effect of, there is a clear prohibition in RCW such and such regarding the use of public funds, equipment, or staff time to support or oppose a ballot proposition, as well as individual people. So you've got to be really careful not to support one side or the other.
Yeah, I think I would leave the EMS out. But basically, I think we have to understand that what's the percentage of our dollars that we pay in property taxes goes to the county?
Well, it's something like 15%.
Yes. Yeah. A pretty large amount of that goes to the county, and we are going to be involved with the county. For like an example, the jail. And the municipal court building is another one that we should be encouraging them to repair that thing before it falls down and we don't have it. Municipal court. But there's going to be other issues, I think, at the county level. I don't know whether we want to comment on the Growth Management Act, but Michael maybe want to comment on that. But I think that's grossly unfair to us. And I would, as a county council, I would certainly encourage the state and the county to work on making it more equitable. And I don't know how to, what the right wording on that is, but I don't know if the other councilmen agree with me on that.
If I may, as I read this article, before it becomes a budget proposition, we can engage to the extent that we would like. Once it's become a budget proposition, yep. As the EMS has, then we can no longer do anything that can be considered supporting one side over the other.
Yeah. But prior to it becoming a bond or a voter-initiated solution.
I don't know if you want to comment on that, Mike, but I certainly think that, from my point of view, we've suffered as a result of growth management.
Yeah, so I think that having a council legislative action or proposal on GMA would be a good thing, but I think we would want to be specific and clear as to what we're asking for as a change in GMA and related to the county, perhaps in regards to stable and consistent urban growth area designations or whatever we might want to ask for would be important. I agree with you. GMA has some challenges and has in some instances presented some real difficulties for the city, but I think we would have to really think about what exactly do we want to ask for if we're going to put something before the state legislators and say we'd like GMA changed this way rather than just saying we don't like it.
I think we're going to say that to Erickson. We have to
be right.
But I think if he doesn't understand it's an issue that affects us, then we need to bring it to attention.
We can bring something back to you, and you could just include that as a modification to the resolution. That'd be easy to do,
there may
I think.
Be some other thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Mike can work on that. Other questions or comments or additions or changes?
Okay. Staff recommends the City Council adopt Resolution 1694-16 adopting the City of Blaine's 2017 legislative agenda. Should I put with modifications?
So I would add, the modification that I'd suggest is adding a bullet point that says, Blaine encouraged the county council to expedite the funding of jail construction and improve the downtown courthouse, if that's something you wanted to include.
Okay, so, care to make a motion?
So moved.
Second. Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed say nay. Motion is carried 7-0.
I have a related question for City Manager. So for the meeting Thursday with Senator Erickson, we will have a list to something in writing. And can you send that to us ahead
yes.
of time? So we'll be prepared to know what we're going to talk to him about.
Okay.
Want to make the most of our time. I think we've got an hour with him or so.
I think so. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is going to be commission, committee, and board reports. Mr. City Manager, the Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee.
That's the meeting next week.
Okay. Meeting next week. Steve, the Blaine Tourism and Advisory Committee.
No report.
Bonnie, Chamber of Commerce.
No report.
Paul, WTA.
The monthly main meeting will be this Thursday, 8 o'clock, in the city courthouse for a change. All are welcome. Okay.
Charlie, the Drayton Harbor Shellfish Advisory Committee. Hey, Dennis, how about your three committees?
The Library Committee was going to meet with Tom Beckwith regarding the number of square feet for projects to proposed changes to the library. And the Senior Center is recognizing vets, and on Wednesday, the November 10th, Harry's been asked to speak.
Okay, I'll be there.
And the 11th, the center will be open. And then on the 12th is a breakfast. So they're hoping to see lots of vets there.
Harry, I think the on the 11th is when the PFW has their ceremony at the Cannon.
Yeah,
that's. I really encourage everyone to attend that. It's very moving and meaningful. It's always meaningful to me. It usually rains like the son of a gun, so bring your umbrella.
Okay.
But they usually have a pretty good group of people.
Dennis, that's it.
And the Boys and Girls Club, I haven't spoken to the new person there this week, so I don't have anything.
Okay, Planning Commission and Parks and Cemetery Board.
No reports, sir, other than the upcoming meetings in early November.
Public Works Advisory Committee.
Our next meeting is November 4th.
Okay, Small Cities Caucus. That meeting was last week, I believe. And the COG put out a legislative agenda. They listed four items on that agenda, and the third item was exit 274. So that will get lots of publicity, and that will be the COG are going to down to Olympia in, was it January or February?
January, the AWC.
Yeah, AWC, yeah, they're going to be down there in January, and they'll be presenting those four legislative items. So we're looking forward to their support, item, you know, exit 274, and we're hoping that if we get a chance to go down there, we'll do the same thing. So that's good news.
What were the other ones, Harry?
Oh, gosh. One is a dam, and that's number one, and the only reason it's number one is that the dam is breaking.
That
it needs to be fixed. I mean, it's on an emergency basis. And God, the other two, I can't. I'd have to go look at my notes. But,
you don't know which dam it is.
No, I don't. It's a dam.
Dam.
Anyway, if you need to know, I will.
I want to know if the dam is by my house.
No, I don't think so. I think it's in the county. Okay, and the Washington Small Cities Caucus. I don't think there's any report. And the North Whatcom Fire Update, Chief Hollander.
I used to live down the river there.
Evening, Council. Tonight I'll share with you our chief's report for the activities through September. First thing I'll point out is that we're at 3,093 responses already this year, which is almost 600 more than last year at this time. So, and we don't get less busy, we just get more busy. We do have a 99% save rate, and that contributed that to the school because there was a large dollar volume at the school, but there was no fire damage. So that's why our save rate for the month is up. 71 calls for the city of Blaine and 4 calls for Semiahmoo. I had a note to myself to see why that response time was 19 minutes. That's about 7 minutes slower than normal. I did not get a chance to do that, so the next meeting I'll let you know why we're slow. Probably because there were only 4 calls. One of those was probably affecting the average of the rest. A little bit in there about the explosion at the school. And I think that's about all I got to report. Pretty quiet this time of year, unless you have any questions of me. Nope.
Questions, go again. The chief?
Yep.
Thank you, Chief, very much. Appreciate it. Okay, next we have department reports. First item is Public Works for the project update.
Great. So it's a good segue. Thank you. Right about now, 7 o'clock, the school board's meeting, and they're actually going to be publicly showing their appreciation to the light crew for their help with the high school. So I'm actually interested in seeing the chief's report on that, but as you're probably aware, our crew was involved. There was a examination of some conduit that a private contractor put in, and the wrong wire touched the ground and kind of created this explosion that went up the chain. The good news is that everything that we put in place before as part of the high school project did exactly what it was supposed to do, and while the transformer was damaged, none of the other infrastructure on the city side was damaged. The transformer is where things transform from being a city responsibility to other owner responsibilities. So we're very happy that we were able to assist. We were able to get a temporary transformer out there and get things back going again. And we're super thrilled that the district is going to be acknowledging our light crew this evening. So I wish I could have, enabled more of us to be there, but the two meetings just coincided pretty much right on the money. We've already talked plenty about the meeting with Senator Erickson. It's this Thursday at 10:30 here at City Hall. We canceled the Wellfield tour, as you're aware, because of the crazy weather we were having that day. I guess I wanted to know, it sounded like Fridays were the best, whether or not you wanted to shoot for this Friday or a week from Friday to reinstate that. Or do you want to just get back to me or Bill?
I thought you already had scheduled it to this coming Friday.
Well, that was the hope. I just want, there's been no correspondence, yeah. So I just wanted to make sure that that worked for everybody.
It's okay for me. Does.
Okay, got one. Yep. Okay, two. Anybody else? So I think.
Yeah, I've got it down. 3 o'clock. Yeah.
Great.
I'll try. Okay.
So if you try, I need to notice it. So can we do it another time with you?
Yes.
Okay. And will it work for you Friday? Okay, great. So we'll see you at our office on Friday. And I'm going to have to arrange for a different vehicle. So, okay, great. High school. Mr. Jones and I went to the Semiahmoo annual meeting on Saturday, and overall, I'd say, judging from the questions that were asked, we're doing a good job. We didn't get a whole lot of questions. A couple of things to follow up on, and a lot of kudos to Councilmember Stewart for really engaging that group with emergency response, and I think there is some follow-up that we can do on that. With that, I'm available if there's any questions. All right, thank you.
Okay, Community Development Services, conditional use permit report.
I prepared this memo for council. Conditional use permits had been requested that we do a little review on those by Mr. Greeno, and we put together this report after looking at some other cities to give you some background. Basically, let's see how others were doing it and if somebody had come up with a great idea on how to do it better. Ultimately, I mean, I'm sure you've had a chance to look through the memo, but our conclusion is we didn't really find anyone that was doing it much better, and in fact, we were somewhat surprised to find that multiple cities, several in fact, that we ran into in our research are basically have almost word for word the same conditional use permit criteria as do we. So our recommendation is to essentially leave it as is unless council really is inclined to have the commission and staff work on that. Potentially, we could come up with some changes that would make it a little bit more objective, maybe make it a little more clear, but I think generally leaving a fairly broad set of criteria is, for one, common, and it also allows the commission and the applicants and the staff latitude in proposing something, reviewing something, and then establishing conditions when necessary for something. It's unfortunately sort of open-ended, but conditional use permits, much like variances or those unusual tools in zoning that give us flexibility in a structure that's supposed to be overall pretty rigid. It's not a perfect science, is kind of what we concluded. So unless one or more of you would like to propose that we bring forward a resolution, that's my recommendation is we leave it as is. Sir.
I am both surprised and delighted to see this evening. I was not anticipating it whatsoever. I have read the conditional use requirements as you've listed them here, and again, I have no real issue with them. But having said that, from my own Planning Commission days, the issue that particularly triggered the thought in my mind was conditional use permits exist in two different flavors, if I may. You may want to put a nursery school in a neighborhood, a church in a neighborhood, a hospital in a neighborhood. So you're putting something that is qualitatively different from mm-hmm. what the neighborhood is generally zoned for. That's an ideal use of a conditional use permit, and the criteria that you've listed here are well chosen to judge just that. The other kind, however, is a quantitative change in the zoning, and the issue that specifically came to my mind back in my Planning Commission days was residential unit density. There was a case where we were proposing to put a density of A on a piece of land, and the zoning requirements allowed for a density of B with a conditional use permit of going to A if all of the criteria were met. The criteria are so vague that they can't not be met. So that in that sense, I would argue that we're deluding ourselves. We're saying that the zoning is this, but we'll allow you to do that if you ask for it. And that's what I object to. I would say that if we want to say that the zoning density requirements on this piece of land should be something or other, great, let's agree to it and do it. But let's not say to, on the one hand, please the neighbors in the neighborhood by saying, oh, we'll only allow 4 units per lot or whatever it was, when in point of fact, if anybody asks us, we will allow 6. That's the root of my concern. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest that you do two things. One, you leave the code as it is with the criteria that you've listed out here, but two, you scrub the code to see where conditional uses allow for something that is qualitatively different from what the area is generally used for, and scrub out the cases where the conditional uses are allowed for something that is more of the same, if I may, for the zoning as it currently exists. Is that reasonably clear?
That is. It's an excellent observation as well.
Thank you.
Did anyone else have anything?
I have a question, Michael. Do PUDs
fit in under any of this?
They don't. No, a planned unit development is a different entitlement permit, which is on a certain level similar because it's a tool for flexibility, but it's a different tool for flexibility. It's like a screwdriver compared to a hammer. They do two different things. They're both for putting stuff into walls.
Is there any conflict between what's proposed in a PUD and the city code?
No. I'm not sure I fully understand what you're asking, but no, I mean the city code says what's permitted in a PUD, thus it's consistent by default.
The other question I have, can the issue of a conditional use require that there be a variance included as part of that?
Well, it's a different tool, so no, not necessarily. Someone might apply for a conditional use permit and a variance on the same project. For example, they might wish to build closer to a property line because it's a very narrow lot that would require a variance, and maybe it's to have a daycare facility in a neighborhood, which would be a conditional use, and therefore it's a conditional use permit. So there's not a requirement that a variance is for a change. This actually relates back to what Mr. Greeno was saying in a way. A variance is typically and almost always for numerical difference in the code, so changing a quantitative standard, building in 5 feet from the setback and or from the property line instead of 10 feet, that's a numerical difference. A conditional use permit is intended to relate to type of use. That's why it's a use permit. So like multifamily versus single family or office versus manufacturing.
I guess I'm kind of with Paul in the fact that it seems to be at times these decisions as to the something that deals with numbers doesn't always come through.
It is, and actually there are a couple places in our code that have been in there for a while, longer than I've been here, I don't know how long, where they are quantitative items addressed with sort of a qualitative permit, and it becomes a matter of kind of splitting hairs to some degree at that point. When it says you can have 8 units per acre, but you need a conditional use permit to have 12 units per acre, I question that as well. I agree with Mr. Greeno on that's a different thing. You should either say those are permitted at that density or they're not, or maybe permit them under a planned unit development, which is a better tool for that. And we do have a couple of those things, and I agree. Now, it's different if single family is permitted and multifamily is a conditional use, because that's a different use, single family to multifamily, the way we look at things. It's a different use. It's not the number that's important, but the combination of units in one building. So I agree that I'd be more than happy to look for those quantitative things, because there are some of those, and they don't fit real well. And you're right, they won't be resolved by changing the conditional use permit code. They'll be resolved by changing the other individual zoning codes where they're listed. Like in the residential office zone, for example, is one of the places, I believe, where it's listed.
So, Michael, when you make the recommendation that they approve these, or only making minor changes, could that fit into that area for the concern Paul has raised, making minor changes? Or would you have to go back and look at some real?
The changes that Mr. Greeno is suggesting are ones that are actually not in the conditional use permit code, so we would probably leave this the same, and we would go to other zoning chapters and look for those things that have been laid out, and then bring those to the commission and say, this is currently a conditional use permit in this zone. Should it either be A, permitted, B, not permitted, or see something else like a planned unit development, which is unfortunately a very bad tool for small properties, so it probably wouldn't work. And that's perhaps why conditional use permits were used back in the day when they wrote that. But we'll go back at the other code. I think we'd probably, unless I'm hearing other direction, we wouldn't come back with something to change the conditional use permit.
So I have a question. If our zoning says 8 units per acre allowed, and a PUD request comes through, and they want to put 16. To me, whether it's a PUD or not, that's a violation of that zoning. So why, I mean, I understand there can be different configurations. They could have a section with single family. They could have, you know, multifamily and maybe have a combination. So is it that as long as the average comes out to no more than 8 per acre, that they're okay? Is that the rationale?
I was just making an example.
Okay.
In that instance, but the way that it would work if we had that, it would say, for example, 8 units per acre permitted, or 12 units per acre with a planned unit development. And that would essentially say, if you're going to do it as a planned unit development and set aside open space, have greater restriction over the way the buildings are allowed to look, and other things like that, that basically giving over more land use regulation to the city, willingly entering into that, then you get to have more density. So we'd have to actually write the code that says that. So I don't think we have those now.
Okay.
But
so in a
we
sense,
do have it now, I believe, where it says it's permitted at a certain density, but with a conditional use permit, you can go to higher density.
Okay.
That's what Mr. Greeno is remembering from his days on the Planning Commission. We don't have a lot of that because it's mostly in the residential high-density zones and the residential medium-density zones, and we don't have a lot of those zones anymore that aren't already filled in. So it's not common, but it is out there. Okay. So we will continue to investigate, but probably not come back or won't come back with a resolution to begin changing this section.
Okay.
Thank you.
Public safety. Chief.
Just a couple of quick items, Your Honor. We're just about on track with North Whatcom. Through the end of September, we had 3,087 incidents handled by our police officers, which is within a quarter of a percent of the workload this time last year. So they're working hard and getting the job done. Where we are down is in traffic infractions. Our criminal traffic and criminal non-traffic arrests are about on par with prior years, but traffic infractions so far this year are a little bit less than one half of what they have been over the average for the last 3 years. And that's predominantly due to a restriction in staffing that puts a cap on how much traffic safety and traffic enforcement work the officers can do. We had an incident last night, which you might get worried about in passing. We had a very bad motorized bicycle accident. It was on Bell Road or on Blaine Road at the Rungi intersection or very close to it. A gentleman coming into town on his motorized bicycle. The call came out as a car versus a bicycle crash with severe injuries near Steamers there. It was investigated by our office, the Washington State Patrol, while North Whatcom attended to the victim. Last I heard, he was transported to hospital for treatment, and it turned out he'd not been hit by a car. He just hit something or a hole at the edge of the road and wasn't wearing a helmet and went end over end and suffered some severe head lacerations out of it. So. It was pretty busy there for a little while. One of our officers was driving by off duty and without directing traffic while the officers assisted until the fire department got there to help. So, any questions I can answer for you folks?
Mike, I just want to make a comment. Officer Green was at the senior center on Saturday collecting old drugs.
How'd it go?
And he indicated that would be something that could be done locally later on. Is that in the plan?
That is a program that we are currently implementing. We've ordered the drug vault. It's a drug take-back program. Many communities have them. We've wanted to start it for a while, and Officer Green, who has been doing excellent work for us since he came on the job in March, offered to step up and spearhead the project. He's also being trained up to be a backup evidence and property technician. And so we'll be installing a drug disposal safe in our office, and people can come in, drop off their unused or no longer needed medications, and It's something that we can make use of the drug incinerator, which you folks authorized us to purchase. We have that now, and we intend to make full use of it. And it helps us keep the drugs off the street and out of other people's hands if they're no longer needed, and also improves water quality by keeping them out of the toilets and the septic system. So I'm glad it went well. It is something that we will be continuing.
Yeah, that was good.
Thank you.
Any questions for the Chief? Are you hearing in? Thank you, Chief, very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. City Manager.
I don't have a report. I just want to mention to the council I'm going to be out of state Thursday through Sunday of this week.
Pardon, I didn't quite get that.
Yeah. I'll be out of state. I'll be down in Reno on Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
I'd be here.
I will not be.
Okay. Okay. Any changes to the calendars? We've got the Thursday, 10:30 with Erickson. And then Friday at 3 o'clock, we've got the well tour. The office will be closed on the 11th. Jeff, do you think that November 14th will be a study session 4:30 or 5 o'clock?
It would be 4:30.
Yeah, so we probably want to make that 4:30, I would think. We didn't really leave a lot of time. Okay, is there any unfinished business? Any new business? Okay, there will be an executive session to discuss collective bargaining pursuant to RCW 42.30.140, four in brackets, A in brackets. And how long do we anticipate being out?
10 minutes, no action.
Okay, 10 minutes, no action. And so I will break the session for an executive session at 7:14.